You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you so much for listening, for subscribing, and to those who support us on Patreon. My name is David Ramil. My usual co-host, Wes Goldberg, is actually traveling to South Florida where he'll be covering a couple of Heat games, so you're stuck with me for the rest of the show. So I'm here to talk about Miami's first game back following the All-Star break. The Heat traveled to Philadelphia to take on the 76ers, who are without their starting center, Joel Embiid, as he recovers from a knee injury. Well, that didn't really matter much because Boban Marjanovic, starting in place of Embiid, had 19 points and 12 rebounds. And Tobias Harris, who we haven't seen since his days with the Clippers, is now with Philadelphia following the trade deadline. He led all scorers with 23 points. The Heat, for their part, were down early, and then they staged a big comeback in the second quarter before ultimately falling short in the last few minutes of the game. The Heat were led by Dwayne Wade's 19 points, and they also got 18 points from Dion Waiters. It was a very uneven game for Miami. They did not shoot the ball particularly well. They went 45 of 95 overall from the field, shooting just 47%. They shot even worse from three-point range, 26% overall. Didn't attempt many free throws, only 12 overall for the game. And again, fell, you know, just short at the end of the fourth quarter. It seemed like they might be able to actually pull out the win there. They had a slight lead, and then unfortunately, the 76ers got hot towards the end, got some timely shooting from J.J. Redick, whereas Miami just couldn't hit a shot. They had a couple shots rim out towards the end there, just couldn't seem to find any offense in the last couple minutes of the game. And unfortunately, again, Philadelphia managed to pull out the win. Not much you can say about this one. Look, Philadelphia's a good team, even without Joel Embiid there. And Miami clearly was looking for answers all night. They didn't have anybody step up particularly well. Even Dwayne Wade's 19 points came on, let's see here, 8 of 18 shooting. Not spectacular. Waiters was a little bit just about as efficient, actually, 7 of 16 overall. But Hassan Whiteside, I think, was really the biggest problem for Miami's starting lineup. He finished with just 4 points in 21 minutes. Didn't really have a response for Marjanovic. Kind of strange how you would think that Marjanovic, if for those of you who haven't seen him play, he's quite slow. He has his limitations. He scores at a historic pace around the rim because of his height and length. He's not necessarily slow-footed, but he's not quick either. And he has the kind of height that it's easy for him to finish around the rim. He has nice touch, too, on his jumper and at his free throws. You know, he shot 7 of 10 from the line. So despite only going 6 of 7 from the field, he still managed to collect some nice points from the charity stripe, though. But Hassan, that was a problem. He just didn't seem to have an answer for him. Wasn't quite sure what he wanted to do. Didn't know if he was going to try to go around him. Just didn't have any speed, really. It was kind of strange watching him unable to figure out Marjanovic. Put up a couple bad shots there. Seemed like he was just uncomfortable with the whole idea. Eventually, he did pick up 3 fouls in the night, but he just didn't play very much either. 21 minutes overall, like I said, and didn't play much in the fourth quarter, if at all. I can't recall exactly, but I don't think he had any minutes in the fourth. And I think that was the biggest problem there. Justice Winslow had a nice game, not a great one. 5 of 11 from the field. Finished with 7 rebounds and 5 assists to go along with 3 steals. Had some decent looks against Ben Simmons. But let me tell you, Ben Simmons really seemed to have his way with the Heat, just exploiting seams in the offense there. Finished with just 4 assists, but had 7 rebounds, but he also had 21 points from the field. So one of his better scoring nights there. Without Embiid there worrying pick and roll, Simmons was a little bit more aggressive offensively, and that really showed in the game, particularly in the first quarter where he had a really nice showing there. But either way, as far as Miami's problems, it just didn't seem to have an answer for Philadelphia all night. They were able to limit J.J. Redick. As far as his shooting from the field, he went 4 of 12 overall, 3 of 10 from three-point range. Constantly on the move, constantly working off screens, as Redick is wont to do. And Miami just didn't seem to have... They had an answer for him for most of the night, but in the fourth quarter, hit a couple of timely shots there, and I think that was really the difference. T.J. McConnell who is not, he's a fan favorite in Philadelphia, but even Sixers fans will admit that he is very limited as far as what he can do as a point guard. He's a high energy guy. He's a tough worker, all the kinds of things that you like, maybe a little reminiscent of Matthew Dellavedova. But at the same time, he just imbued a sense of energy that Miami didn't have for most of the evening. They fell into that early deficit, clawed their way back, had a slight lead, and then just kind of fell apart there towards the end. Didn't really seem to have an answer. Now, the loss, unfortunately, drops Miami's record to 26-31 overall. So they are now 5 games under .500, 10th place overall in the Eastern Conference standings. And for some of you, that's probably pretty good news. From judging from some comments that we saw on Twitter, it seems like most of you, or at least a great deal of you, were interested in Miami losing this game and, I guess, improving their chances at a draft pick. For our listeners that are familiar with my stand on the draft, I'm not too excited about that. I just don't know that it makes much of a difference. But I guess we currently have a good chance of holding on to the 9th pick in the draft, so a lottery pick. I'm not sure how likely that will stay. Obviously, Miami plays a number of games at home. I think 10 or 12 of the next 14 games at home. So they're going to have an opportunity there to win at home, but that's been a struggle for them all season. And I'm not sure that there's any clear answer there as far as what Miami's trying to do. Now, we'll get to some Twitter questions later on that address tanking and whether or not Miami was, let's say, subtly trying to throw the game. It did look that way based on some of Eric Spoelstra's rotation changes towards the end of the game there. Like I mentioned, Hassan Whiteside, who wasn't exactly efficient, didn't play in the fourth quarter, but he also kept Roddy Magruder in there a little bit too long. They did lose James Johnson in the second quarter, unfortunately. I think he wasn't showing much in the few minutes that he did play, but he wound up hurting what seemed like his left shoulder, and then he went immediately to the locker room at some point after, it didn't seem quite clear how he hurt his shoulder, but he was holding it in place there as he went to the locker room, and we just got word from the Heat that he was out for the game after that. So I guess they'll evaluate that shoulder, and we'll determine exactly whether or not he'll miss any time. I'm sure James is, despite his struggles, a valued member of this team and what he might be able to provide during this home stretch. So we'll see how long, if any, games he has to miss. But for now, we'll answer some Twitter questions after this break.
What's up, Heat fans? We've got a special announcement. We're going to be giving away a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to a lucky fan. All you have to do is leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat. Take a screenshot of both and email it to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Once we get to 150 iTunes reviews and 1,500 followers on Twitter, we'll randomly select someone to send a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt to. You get to decide the style and the size. Once we get to 150 and 1,500, we will cut off submissions, so get your submission in now for a D-Wade World Tour t-shirt. It could be yours for free.
Now let's go to Twitter and answer some of the questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Billy writes in, 3 of 14 from Josh and Dion. That means from three-point range. That really sunk them. Spo and Riley need to have those two just practicing threes if they're going to shoot that bad. Well, I'm sure, Billy, as you know, that there's nothing you can do. It was just a bad shooting night, unfortunately, particularly for Josh Richardson and Deion Waiters. They struggled from three-point range. A lot of those looks were open, and I don't have a problem with that. I think in some cases, I know Waiters in particular rushed a few shots. I'm trying to recall Richardson's shot, and I think a lot of those were open. I'll have to go back and rewatch from what I remember. They seem mostly open. He just wasn't knocking them down, and that's uncharacteristic. A bad shooting night from him. That's not a typical night for Josh. And so I don't think that there's anything that Spoelstra or Riley can particularly do. But I will say this, as far as the poor shooting, the Heat did shoot 6-23 overall. So it was 3 of 9 from everyone else on the team. But Philadelphia wasn't much better. They went just 7 of 26 from behind the arc. So you can win a game. You can put up over 100 points still shooting, basically 26% from three-point range. That's not necessarily the difference. The problem was that they had Boban Marjanovic, and his inside presence was really a problem for the Heat. And moreover, though, it was the free throw disparity. Philadelphia connected on 25 of their 35 attempts at the line, and Miami took just 12 free throws, hitting on just 6 of them. So even the few free throws Miami was awarded, they weren't really able to capitalize them, but it's the difference in play. Miami was selling for a lot of shots there. Look, Justice Winslow couldn't really attack the paint because of Marjanovic's large presence, because of Ben Simmons' great defense. He just couldn't seem to find open seams at the rim. He was taking a lot of mid-range jumpers. Those were falling. Same for Josh. It seemed like a lot of his shots were coming from the mid-range as well. Either way, though, nobody really aggressively getting to the hoop. Miami just didn't seem to have an ability to get through there. Not sure if it was just because of some poor screen setting. I think Hassan set some good screens. I think Bam, in his minutes, set some good screens. He finished with 6 points on 17 minutes. Also contributed just 2 rebounds and 2 assists, 2 steals as well. So not a great night for Adebayo. But anyway, as far as the free throw disparity, that seemed like, to me anyway, the bigger difference as far as the reason why Miami lost tonight's game. Look, Jimmy Butler, we know he can get to the line. He finished 8 of 8 from the line. That's a huge difference maker. He had a poor shooting night, just 5 of 14, but he still finished with 18 points. Why? Because he got those easy trips to the line, and he was able to knock those down. Nobody on the Heat shot more free throws than Dwayne Wade. You know, 39 million year old Dwayne Wade shot 6 free throws. That's not good enough. You know, if there is any glaring weaknesses in either Justice's or Josh's game, it's the fact they just don't get to the line very much. And that's a problem. I'm not sure if it's whether or not they're not getting the call, whether they don't do enough to sell contact. I think they're both wired to absorb contact. They're so tough mentally as far as what they perceive to be playing the quote-unquote right way. They absorb contact. They take it. They don't flop. They don't try and sell contact. And it's a skill like any other. I mean, you can claim that you don't like James Harden's style of play, but you can't deny how effective it is. And, you know, there are other players around the league that do it. You don't have to be as egregious as Harden, but you can still get to the line and can still be effective, and you're getting easy points. Look, if those shots aren't falling, and like for Richardson going 6 of 15 or Winslow 5 of 11, those shots weren't falling, then you do what you can to score. I mean, this is a 4-point game. 4 of those could have been at the line, and that wouldn't have been much. If Winslow had taken any free throws, he didn't take a single one. Richardson didn't take a single one. Kelly Olynyk, who started also, finished with 15 points and 7 of 13 shooting, but he didn't take a single free throw. That's 3 of your starters that didn't take a single free throw. I mean, Boban Marjanovic took more free throws by himself than the whole starting lineup, almost more than the whole roster, with the exception of Wade. So that's a problem. You're going to have to figure out some way of getting these easy points, and Miami just couldn't seem to figure out anything tonight, and that was a problem as well. So, you know, not a good look for a team, but sorry, Billy, I don't think it's the 3 points shooting so much as it is the free throw shooting, or lack of. We got a question here from Washed Riley, hashtag Washed Riley, who asks, what do you see Derrick Jones Jr. looking like production-wise at his best in Miami? Now, Derek came back from injury today, wound up playing 17 minutes. Looked good, to be honest with you, in those 17 minutes. Not spectacular defensively, still having some struggles there, but had some positive moments. Finished with 9 points on 4 of 7 shooting, 1 of 2 from 3-point range, also chipped in 2 boards. So not the huge statistical night, but again, trying to round into form, and the athleticism and explosion was there. He caught a couple of lobs, looked as athletic as ever, had some really nice length around the rim, you know, the kind of things that we're used to seeing from Derek. And so it was a positive showing for him. We've also gotten reports that Goran Dragic has engaged in full contact practice with the team. He's actually traveled with the group and will be on the road with them before they return back to Miami. So that's a positive sign. So, but anyway, back to Washed Riley's question regarding Derek Jones Jr., I think we addressed this in a recent mailbag. They're all starting to blend in, so please excuse me, but we've talked about that before. Derek is a very nice player. I think we love his youth. We love his athleticism, but the 3-point shot isn't nearly as consistent as we'd like it to be, even though he did go 1 of 2 tonight. But the problem is also, I just think physically, he's not going to be able to withstand the kind of contact that he'll absorb as he gets to the rim. I mean, I think he's had a number of minor injuries over the course of his Heat career. And that's going to be a problem. Yeah, I think he's probably of the mindset that he doesn't want to bulk up too much because that limits him. He might not feel comfortable playing at a heavier rate. But, you know, you look at guys like Brandon Ingram and other really, really skinny players around the league, and they have a problem absorbing contact. Derek has some elite athleticism, but I don't think he's going to be a high usage player. They're never going to draw up plays for Derek. I think where he's most effective, as we've seen this season, is catching rebounds. He does not create his own shots, so I would imagine that his ball handling probably needs to be a substantial focus for him in the offseason, something he needs to improve as far as being able to shoot off the dribble, create his own offense, and make plays for others. You don't want the ball in his hands. He's basically a guy who you can catch lobs to, or you can toss lobs to, and he can catch those with ease, obviously. Maybe even eventually a catch-and-shoot three-point player. But he's not going to create those opportunities for himself, and so he's still dependent on others. Now, we saw earlier, obviously there's been some drop-off, we saw Rodney Magruder be able to make that leap as far as creating his own shot. So I'm curious to see whether or not Derek might follow something similar. If that's the case, then if I had to give like a specific numbers, I'd say he could be roughly a 15-point-per-game player. I think he's capable of that because a lot of his shots do come around the rim. He has the kind of length and athleticism where he's going to be able to get that shot off over anybody. And so long as he can mix up a somewhat consistent three-point shot, let's say somewhere in the 35% range from beyond the arc, then he can be a valuable player. Again, I don't think he's going to be a guy who creates his own shot, at least not anytime soon. If he continues to work on it over the offseason, there's no reason to think that he will not, then maybe he can create some more opportunities for himself and bump those numbers up a little bit. Somewhere around 15 points per game, probably close to 10 rebounds per game just because of that length and athleticism. Hopefully he can get some of those assist numbers up. And again, maybe shooting somewhere around 50% from the field and 35% overall from three-point range. So that's how I see it as far as his overall production at his best being in Miami, because right now there is still depth on this team, and unfortunately Derek hasn't done enough, even with injury, especially with injury perhaps, to stand out and create any kind of opportunities for himself. So we'll see. Miami, if they get a draft pick, who knows what will happen with that, but as Wes and I talked about on a recent show, we think they probably would target a playmaking for somebody who has a versatile skill set, who can space the floor a little bit and make plays for others, because that's something that's lacking. It's lacking from Derek. It's lacking from anybody. You could say you get that out of James Johnson, but you get it a little too inconsistently. And at his age, you don't want to make him the focus of your offense moving forward. You don't want to have him be a central piece of this team, especially given that you have younger players like Winslow Richardson locked up already under contract. So you'd probably target a four. Now, we've got some more Twitter questions, particularly about tanking, and we'll get to those after our break. Okay, so one more of our Twitter questions here comes from @CraigDillinger, who asks, did Spoelstra keep Rodney Magruder in too long in the fourth? Personally, I felt that he should have subbed for Winslow as soon as the Heat lost the lead. You know, it's interesting there. Magruder did not have a huge night for Miami. Played 23 minutes, only finished with 4 points, chipped in 6 rebounds and 3 assists, the kind of effort plays that we're used to seeing from Rodney. Went 2 of 3 from the line for those 4 points. He's definitely been less aggressive since his start of the season. But as far as his minutes in the fourth quarter, the reason why I wanted to answer this question, it's a great one, and we appreciate everybody who submitted questions using the #ElloHeat today. But I think it's, as some people have theorized, this might have been a subtle indicator that Miami was trying to throw the game. I don't know. I mean, we'll never know for certain whether or not that might have been the case. It seems like Justice Winslow, for his struggles offensively, still would have been able to provide solid defense and some playmaking ability. He might have been the difference maker there in a very tightly contested game. So I'm not sure why Magruder got the bulk of those minutes in the fourth quarter. That's something that I'm sure Spoelstra is going to be asked, but I'm not sure that he's going to have a specific answer for. Maybe he'll just say it was his gut or it was a hunch or something along those lines, or he just felt like Winslow needed a break. Winslow eventually did foul out, so I think maybe that's a big part of it too. Maybe he was struggling as far as his physical defense is concerned, so I think that's a big part of it as well. But if there were issues regarding tanking, as many of our listeners or many people on Twitter suggest, this is a good opportunity for Miami to throw these games. Look, something that my co-host Wes has been saying is that these next few games will clearly indicate how Miami sees themselves and sees their path for the rest of the season. Look, if they make the playoffs, they're not going to advance very far. So are they all in on the playoffs? I get the feeling that they are. Wes gets the feeling that they are. But that's not to say that they won't lose enough games where they'll have to say, you know what, what are we really fighting for here? I'm sure that they'd love to give Dwayne Wade a great send-off, and that would probably include a game in the playoffs. But at the same time, they're not going to sacrifice their future completely for Dwayne Wade's sake, because he's already, you know, he's already out the door. And so there's no reason to sacrifice the future of this team. And if you could lose additional games, if you can just continue to play the younger players and see what you'll get out of them, give them as many minutes as possible and make them the focus moving forward, then that is a quote-unquote soft tank. Maybe we've seen evidence of that throughout the season. There have been some questionable rotation decisions from Spoelstra. He's been evasive when it comes to those questions. I'm not sure if he's ever specified his reasoning. I don't think he has one. I know he's said many times that he's still looking for answers and he hasn't quite figured out this team yet, even though we're 60 games into the season now, almost 60 games into the season. So if there's a tank in place, it's a very subtle one, but it could be one that we'll see more often over the next few games. So be on the lookout for that. And maybe we'll see more strange lineups. Maybe we'll see some starter quality players, you know, take a sudden seat on the bench and maybe they won't play as much. I'm not sure who that would be, to be honest with you, because if you're going to focus on the young players developing, you're going to have to play Winslow and Richardson, and they probably give you your best chance of winning. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know that there is one. Maybe it's just subtle moves here and there where you take a starter like Winslow and you sit him down for prolonged periods of time. If it's a game where Bam Adebayo is playing particularly well, then maybe you sit him down. I know somebody also wrote in using the hashtag AskAloHeat that Derrick Jones Jr. was getting a little too hot, so we have to sit him down right away in order to preserve the loss. Worked out well for that person in particular anyway, so I'm not quite sure what the future for this team holds, at least the immediate future. It doesn't look like it's a particularly bright one. But anyway, I think that's all we have for today. Thanks so much for listening. Sorry you got stuck with me, but Wes should be here sometime next week. When you get in your car, make sure to tell your smart device to play the podcast Locked on Heat. Connect with us on Twitter at Locked on Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. We'll catch you next time. Thank you so much for joining me.